Shurupok. Shurupok is a city-state that is dedicated to Ninlil, who is Enlil's spouse. Enlil, of course, being Earth Colony Commander. And the capital here, the Earth Colony Command, is in Nippur, where Enlil lives. And probably Ninlil too, but although Shurupok is her patron city. Now, out of Shurupok, there is quite a few interesting artifacts, and I think we should probably discuss them here. The first one, 5A, is a cuneiform text. That cuneiform text is simply a wet, soft piece of clay that they take a stylus and they poke into that clay, the very first written language on earth. It is called cuneiform. And you're looking at many tablets before you there on both sides of this slideshow that are written in cuneiform. Now, at the time cuneiform is being written out, there are no earthlings that can read it. So some of this stuff was written before the semi-divine kings were taught the language, the written language. At that time, there's only one language. Everyone spoke the same until the Tower of Babel incident, which you'll see in Borsippa. You can find that on the city-state Borsippa, which is Naboo's patron city. And in there, you'll find the ruins of the Tower of Babel. Anyway, looking at these artifacts, there's a lot of crisscrosses of information here between the Bible and these cuneiform texts coming out of Mesopotamia, the place between the rivers where everything began. Southern Iraq, Shurupok, more central, between the rivers Tigris and Euphrates. I believe it's still in Iraq. So the first thing you're looking at is an antediluvian, before the flood, kings prior to the flood, antediluvian. It is the list of kings. How do we know what the kings' names are prior to the flood? We've never been taught a name. How would we know any of it? They were all killed off, you know, but Noah and his family. Maybe a close friend or two, I don't know. I would assume so. But the whole deal here in Shurupok is it's Ninlil's city-state, and Enlil, her spouse, is the colony commander over in Nippur. So how much time she spends here in Shurupok, don't really know. But that's a heck of an artifact right there. If you want to know who the original kings were, see, kingship was brought down from heaven. What that means is their father, King Anu, runs planet Nibiru. He's the government. He's the king. That's a one-world order over there, and they paid dearly to achieve a one-world order after having to war against everybody. So you end up with a lot of damage done to their planet, achieving the one-world order. And you can imagine what would happen to ours should you start taking away all these nations' sovereignty. It makes some people mad, and you'd be at war. That's exactly what happened to them. Anyway, they came to Earth by accident. And when they got here, the first guy who gets there He notices that there is gold on this planet, and it's the gold that they need on their planet. They somehow turn it into a powder of some sort, and they fill the gap in their atmosphere with this gold flake treatment. And that gold flake will keep the gases in, and their planet is saved. But they need plenty of this gold flake. So gold doesn't seem to be available anywhere in our solar system, but two places. And they should know they're madly on the hunt for gold. And when they hear it's on Earth, the King Anu sends his oldest and wisest son to go check it out. So that gold is a chance to save the planet. They're definitely going to follow up on it. There's one guy waiting for him, and he happens to be King Alalu, who had just tried a coup back on planet Nibiru. He killed the existing king and thought he could make himself king, and finds out that he had a challenger to the throne, King Anu, who wasn't going for what Alalu did. And so Alalu's in trouble. He hops in his disc and he flies through the Forbidden Zone. The Forbidden Zone being the asteroid belt. Every time they fly through there, or try to, someone gets killed. So they forbade anyone from going there. Well, that's a good place for a guy on the run to go, because he figures they won't follow. So he takes his flying saucer. He makes it to planet Earth. He blasts through the asteroid belt using a nuclear missile. He has 8 on his flying saucer. He uses 1 to get through. As he gets through, there's a hole there for a while, and he lands, checks things out, sees the air is good, the, you know, sweet waters, there's salt waters, oceans with life in there, fishes to eat, wild animals to eat, fruit growing on trees. Everything's just too good to believe. So he wired back to King Anu saying, I'll save the planet if you make me king before you. And King Anu goes, wait a minute, let's just see what you're saying. If it's true, first we'll do that. Then we'll figure out who's king. So Anu sends Enki. Enki comes to Earth, and that's when man's history will later begin. But that's the beginning of the Anunnaki, who came down and colonized the Earth. Now, after colonizing the Earth and being tired of all the work they have to go through, such as digging the soil, digging out canals, building ships, everything that's needed to imagine to start a nation, what do you need? So what they would do is, first, they would try to get themselves their own house built. And they would declare this area, and the next guy declares that area. And about 50 miles, I guess you'd say, up the river of Euphrates, coming from the Persian Gulf, which is where they landed. And they go to the shore there in southern Iraq, following the rivers. The next thing you know, they're building their ziggurat homes along these rivers. And next thing you know, they get tired of doing the work. There's 300 mining the gold in South Africa, approximately 300 in the Garden of Eden, setting up everything needed for society to be fed, clothed, housed, you know, the whole works. That's a lot of work when you're starting from scratch. So you got 300 there in the garden, and you've got around 300, some stationed on Mars, because that's the way station, and some are just simply space truckers. Now, here's what they figured out, Anu, Inky, and Enlil. After discovering there is gold here, they figured the way they get it back to their planet would be mine it in South Africa, where it's bountiful, ship it up to the Garden of Eden, where Gibble will smelt it and take out the impurities to where you're down to pure gold, which lightens the load. And when they get a load, they would ship that. It's too far to ship it to their planet, so they would ship it to Mars. And on Mars, they would establish what you need to have a little way station on Mars. And you can imagine what that takes. So, again, there's construction going on Mars. There's warehousing. There's everything needed for blast off and landing. It's all sitting there. So then their planet would come by through our solar system, the planet that crosses through, the planet that flies by. They come from way out in space and then come around into our solar system, right about just on the outside of the asteroid belt. That's another story. See Planet Nibiru for the story of the asteroid belt. So here comes Planet Nibiru through there, and they would take what they had stored on Mars and dump it off at that time to Nibiru, because Nibiru is just on the other side of the asteroid belt. It's as simple, providing that they got a way through it. It's a simple dump off to Planet Nibiru from Mars. And it's, you get better gas mileage because there's less gravity on Mars. So it made a lot of sense, and they chose Marduk to start that, and then later somebody else takes over and Marduk comes down to Earth. But there are space truckers hauling this stuff. They take the gold to Mars, and then from Mars to Planet Nibiru, and then they bring back the supplies, ship it through Mars, and then to Planet Earth. And by the way, we are the seventh planet as you enter our solar system from outside, like they are. As they come into our solar system, we're lucky number seven. We're the seventh planet, counting from the outside toward the sun. Lucky number seven, that's where it comes from. It's also seven, let's say a seven-pointed star, is the symbol of Earth Colony Commander Enlil. All this you can find on the pages dedicated to these topics. There's so much information here. Please stick with it if you're interested. If ancient history interests you, you've come to the right spot, because you'll never see anywhere that has what is shown here on this website and gives you an honest view of what you're seeing. So there, it's all set up. Next thing you know, they get tired of the work. They need a worker race. Inky starts playing around with the animals he sees. He's half mule, half lion, these type of things. Just simply DNA manipulations. And he could never produce a worker beast who could carry the load, take the instructions, and not be a problem. So it just wasn't working out. And Enlil's getting mad. His brother, younger brother, but the colony commander, he's getting mad because Inky's putting these weird beasts all over Earth that soon are wandering around, and he wants it stopped. So that's where Inky finds Homo erectus, and he and his sister Ninhursag, and go to Inky's page or Ninhursag's page to see the artifacts and the texts. But anyway, they decide they would fashion a worker race out of Homo erectus. And for the people who are believers in evolution, you know there's a missing link between Homo erectus and Homo sapien. About a million years of evolution just happened overnight. How could that possibly be? So evolution kind of stops in its tracks. It might work on every other living thing on Earth, but it does not work for man. Something happened that changed Homo erectus into Homo sapien. And that is simply Inky and his sister Ninhursag, who are true lovers. I mean, it's not one of those things you're forced for an official. They are true lovers. And they get together and they start modifying Homo erectus, and 50,000 years later, they've got one. Model man, the Lulu, the worker. And then Herzog holds up the baby and says, I've done it. I've taken the yoke of the gods and placed it on the back of man. Okay? And then as man multiplies and they have sex with the daughters of man, they produce children who become the first kings, who are a mixed breed of their race and the earthling race. So the earthling might be 5 feet, the mixed breed might be 10 feet, and the god might be 15 feet. You see the difference? So the one in the middle, the blended, the mixed breed, he's going to be taller, stronger, faster, smarter, and live much longer than the earthling. Therefore, they give him positions of authority over the earthling, and they are their descendants, after all. So you've got kings that show up here and there, and you got high priests that show up here and there. And in the beginning, all of them are giant mixed breeds. It's no different than Shurupak. So when you look at the kings, which we will, you'll see that these are the mixed breeds. No one else would have authority. Only their descendants, and over their descendants is them. So how it works is, say, Shurupak, you'd have the god living in the ziggurat who would give the laws and the orders of society to the king, who would pass it on to the people and enforce them to be minded by the people. Next would be a high priest. Sometimes it is the king who is both high priest and king. Sometimes not. Most of the times not. But anyway, the high priest, being a giant mixed breed, he's living in the ziggurat with the god of that ziggurat. He's living with the giant alien god, okay? And he's living in this pyramid designed and initially built by the gods, but later repaired through thousands of years by the kings. Anyway, you'll see these kings show up in these cities, and it's no different in Shurupak. Shurupak being dedicated to Ninlil, who's the spouse of Enlil, you would expect nothing but descendants coming off of Enlil's line running that city-state. So we can go through the maps, and here's an artifact where it says 9A, it's like the third one. you can hit refresh to restart the slideshow. You put your cursor on the artifact and it stops it. But a brief description pops up. If that description's in the way of you viewing it, then put your cursor on the opposite artifact. A description will pop up on it. Stop the slideshow, and you can view the one you want. So I want to view 9A, and I want to stop the slideshow so I can do it. So I'll put the cursor on 9A, and I see up pops this instructions, and it's kind of blocking my view. So I'm going to switch and put the cursor on 4A, and now I can see 9A clearly. And 9A, what is it? Well, it is the text of the instructions of Shurupak. Wait till you read that text. And so you're looking at something written about prior to the flood, before man could write. There it is. And it saved for thousands and thousands of years. Why? Because the gods knew how to do it. And there it is. And then it's buried for a couple thousand years, 2,500 years, before archaeologists rediscover them. So you're talking about a total rediscovery of who we are. Unless if you're not ready for that, you're at the wrong place. If you're looking for information and knowledge of who you are, how it happened, you're at the very, very best place you can be. So we'll go on and you'll see what I'm talking about. You'll see some maps. You'll see an aerial view. Then comes Artifact 10D. There's Noah and his spouse. Somehow this artifact survives, but it doesn't mean it was made back then. But it's the artifact of Noah and his spouse. I guess the Bible is historically accurate, kind of gives some description. And I guess the Mesopotamian cuneiform texts are definitely historically accurate. So, and you'll see how the two fit together. So here's Noah from the Mesopotamian artifacts, but he's also within the five books of Moses. Next is an artifact, and this is an ancient tablet describing Noah's water clock. Enki gives Noah a water clock, basically saying, because they have no watches, basically it's showing Noah how much time he has left to prepare for the disastrous, devastating, exterminating flood that Enlil is going to send us. So he's only got so much time left to finish what Enki tells him to do, and he can watch the water clock, and so he knows exactly when he's got to get into that ark. So that's a pretty interesting artifact. And the next one, 8A, you'll see water clock. And then 8, you'll see water clock. And you'll also see a snake god, Enki, and Noah. And what you're talking about in artifact 8A is Noah reading the water clock, but he's standing behind a reed wall while Enki speaks loudly about a flood that's coming. You see, Enki had to promise his brother Enlil, as did all of them, that they would never let the humans know that Enlil's going to exterminate them. I mean, why would you tell them? So all the gods had to promise Enlil they'll say nothing. Well, Noah is a very loyal and obviously a loved offspring mixed breed of Inky. Inky's the wisest of them all. He sees what his younger brother's doing. He's against it. So he goes to his son, Noah, and this is how these artifacts begin. 8A. Okay? Noah's behind the reed wall. Inky's speaking about it to the snake god loudly so Noah could hear him. That way he can tell his brother Enlil, I didn't tell Noah a thing. I didn't speak to him about it. Childish, shouldn't it? But that's what happened there. And then you see the actual artifacts that start to come across. And these artifacts with this strange snake god. Well, the snake is representing things like DNA. As we use snakes entwined on a staff with a royal crown above it and wings depicting the same god that you're looking at right here, which is the god of DNA, Ningazita's son, who assisted, or Inky's son, Ningazita, I'm sorry, who assisted his father and his aunt, Ninhursag, in developing a worker race, and they want to preserve it. They need the workers. Enlil's going to eliminate them. Inky has more than a worker relationship with some of these, as do other gods, and they're not necessarily for their extermination. So here Inky develops a plot to save his son and his son's family, maybe a close friend. And that's what you're looking at, artifacts discussing the flood. E.D., Inky's discussing it with the snake god, that's his son. Eight, a wonderful artifact, little text tablet about the construction of the ark. Oh, wait a minute. Is there more information here than what you've got in the five books of Moses and Genesis? By far, there's more information here. Does it contradict? It depends how you interpret what you're reading in the mysterious texts called the five books of Moses, or what you're reading in a recorded history in Mesopotamia. Now, some of this, like that construction, that little tablet there in his hands, the gods did that. Man did not write that down. That was preserved for man by the gods. Now, the gods knew that Noah isn't going to be able to read that or his descendants, but they do believe that someday a generation like ours will come along and want to know exactly who we are. And so these artifacts become discovered and hidden. Now there's the problem of hiding this information from the earthlings. When the earthlings were right in front of our faces for many thousands of years, but around 500, 300 BC, they seemingly disappear. They didn't go anywhere. They just left sight. So what you're talking about here is artifacts of the gods by the gods, artifacts about the creation of man, artifacts about the saving of the species of humans, and artifacts about the kings dedicated to the god who is the patron of the city-state that king is in charge of. All the power comes from the gods. All the instructions comes from the gods. King takes care of the government, and the high priest takes care of the religious ceremonies and the hype of loyalty to the god. Now, you don't want to make that god angry. It is his city, or hers. So now you're seeing more and more, and you're seeing a water clock, and you're seeing all kinds of artifacts of the snake god and Enki at work. Let's see, a good example is 8G. 8G. What you're looking at is a cylinder seal, little bitty thing, about the size of a big finger. The cylinder seal is simply a rock that has been shaped into this very smooth, uncarved cylinder. And then they take that cylinder and they reverse carve a scene onto that rock. Somehow, without making any errors, and somehow with extreme detail. Then they take that negative scene and they roll it on wet clay. The wet clay produces the positive scene, which is what you're looking at in 8G. The negatives on the elongated rock, which they call I'll get to that in a minute. And on the right is the scene that the gods are preserving for all times. And these artifacts have lasted for all time. And you can reprint this scene and hand it to all the city-states, and you've got the first printing press. You also add some text to it, and you've got the first newspaper. So who could reverse carve, first create this cylinder seal, is what it's called. Who would create this, or even think of this, and then smooth out this rock, and then reverse carve art, reverse carve a scene on a little bitty rock, and then that scene can last forever and can be distributed forever, over and over and over. We're looking at them today. Some of these were done thousands of years ago. Some of these were probably recently rolled on clay because they just discovered the cylinder seal. You see what I'm saying? These artifacts are becoming available, hidden for a long time by the powers to be. I'll let you figure that out. And because they were hidden, you have no knowledge. You and I both have no knowledge of who we are, where we come from, other than the very, very short story you find in Genesis. They're trying to give you 6,000 years or so in a couple paragraphs. Methuselah lives 1,000 years, has so many kids, and so's the heir, and that's it. You don't know a damn thing about those 1,000 years. Well, here you do. So we'll continue as you go through the snake god, Enki, and Noah has a lot of work to do. And on 9A, you're looking at Noah and what he's instructed to do, as the Torah or the Old Testament would tell you. He is to take a pair, male and female, of the clean animals, clean, aboard the ark, and preserve that species for all time. And Noah's going to wipe it out. So not only is Enki involved in saving the human race, he's involved in saving everything you see living on Earth, except maybe some insects. Okay, so what we have here is Noah. He has no idea what he's doing or what to do, so he receives the help and the instructions from Enki and son Nengizita. Well, Nengizita is in charge of collecting the life essence, not a pair of everything, but the life essence of everything, meaning, well, a fertilized egg, the sperm, the egg, you know, that's all you got to do, put it in a petri dish. Now, how would Noah even know anything about that? And that's how you have room to take every living thing aboard the boat, the ark. You can't take all those animals. They wouldn't get along. Now, they most definitely took some because they got to eat while they're sitting and maintaining that boat. So they definitely brought animals on that boat. And by clean, what do you mean, clean animals? Well, what that means is don't bring in any of Inky's experiments, half lion, half giraffe. All these worker animal experiments that are running around the planet, freaking everyone out, perhaps dangerous as well. All of these were Inky's attempt to create a worker so someone else could dig the gold out of the mines instead of his people, his 300 that he's responsible for. They quit. They go on strike. We've got to have replacements. I mean, there's a lot of trouble about that, and you can read about that, exactly the problem. So here's the problem. Here's why Inky did what he did. And I think you ought to be glad about that. And you definitely should know who Inky and Herzog and Ningazita is. There's no you without them. So they're taking the life essence of these animals, and they're taking just a few earthlings, a few humans. And these humans have Inky's blood if they're descendants of Noah. The spouses don't know who they are descendants of. But I can tell you, they marry their sister. For instance, Noah married his cousin, okay, his first cousin. He had no sister. He had no half-sister. So he married Benesaurus or something. I don't know. He married a girl who no doubt was a Nephilim, one of a mixed breed. With the blood of the gods, they did that so their offspring, especially their heir, would be of the double seed, which is a law of succession on their planet. In order to succeed the king, you should be the king's offspring with the king's sister. So you would have an official wife, your sister, and then you'd have your lovers as concubines. Well, in Inky's case, his true love isn't in Herzog, his sister. So, you know, they hang out quite a bit, and you'll read quite a bit about it as you read the text. So here's Inky with every reason on earth to save Noah, and he does. With a little help, just like he fashioned Homo sapien out of Homo erectus. Well, now he's trying to save him. Why? Because there's still a lot of work to be done on planet Earth, and he doesn't want his people stuck doing the work again. That's why. You can read all about it. Now, the next 9B, I'll kind of speed this up a little. 9B, you see the cylinder sealed on the left, and you see a detailed scene, a historical scene that must be preserved for all time. The gods must have thought so, or they wouldn't have gone through this work. You understand? So in this scene, let's see what the description says. It says Ningazita, that's the first guy, Inky, that's the guy on his knees. Enlil, that's the guy giving shit to the guy on his knees. And Noah, that's the guy with the lamb sacrifice, which is nothing more than let's have a barbecue dinner on me for the gods. We cook for the gods, we clean for the gods, we do everything for the gods. And there's Noah with dinner. Well, Inky is getting his ass eaten by Enlil. Now, what does Inky do? He doesn't want to take this shit from his little brother, who isn't as smart as he. He simply says, brother, who's going to do the work now? Now that you killed everybody and everything, who's going to do the work now? And he knows that he almost had a revolution on his hands prior. Maybe Inky makes sense. It's a little late. So, okay, Noah gets to survive and his family. Here's what happens. We're going to take Noah and stuff him over here, and he gets to live forever with, we'll give him our secret elixir of life and all these things. And he continues to live for thousands of years with his spouse, away from the rest. His three sons are divided. They got to start reproducing quickly. There are no workers. So they divide, you take, Inky takes two of them and divides them up amongst his people, his offspring, his sons and grandsons, and Inky gets one, which ends up in the hand of, Shem, which ends up in the hands of Nabu. We'll get to that in a later place as well. Shem, the son of Noah, is the founder of the city Asher. Asher is dedicated to the god Asher. Asher is Inki's son, one of the twins between Osiris and Seth, as Egypt would put it. These are the twins, Asher being Osiris and Seth being the other twin. Asher being the oldest of the twins is the one that Inky is looking to. I mean, Enlil, my goodness, is the one Father Marduk is looking to be his heir. Asher is a warrior god who assists his father Marduk in many battles against Enlil's clan. So, Asher would be a god that comes later in Assyria. You can find him there. And lots that were said, lots that maybe he said or other gods said, and lots that the king said he told them to do. Inky sits there and he argued, yes, earthlings get to survive. Please don't reproduce these crazy things you're doing. Don't make any more of them. We'll use the human race. And we'll eventually let them do everything and leave this place to him, which is their plan. They just came for the gold and other minerals that they need back home. But they're not going to give up their colony. That's not going to happen. Too much DNA here. Too many varieties of life. I would imagine every alien that's ever been here is interested in our DNA. So here you've got the sons divided and population begins again. And this time they're not living 1,000 years. They're starting to live 400 and maybe 300. And occasionally you'll get a guy who's back up to 600 or 700. But it's starting to dwindle. So as the Bible might point out to you, the first 10 generations down to Noah, right here, they married their sister. If they didn't have it, their half-sister. If they did have it, their first cousin, like Noah. Now, what that's going to do is give you assured DNA from the gods, both from the mother and the father. That's going to be better than the father having children from a concubine. He can't produce an heir that way. The heir has to come through the double seed. A concubine isn't a seed directly from the king. So they have this law, and Inky's out of control of Earth Colony, and younger, not a smart brother, Enlil is. Inky decides, well, you know, better get along, I'll help my brother. Well, Inky's eldest son thinks he's screwed. That's Marnik. And Enlil's oldest son, Ninurta, wants to stay in line as heir to the kingship of their planet and whatever colonies they have. So next thing you know, Inky's son is at war with Enlil's son, and so Earthlings begin to learn how to kill each other. War. Through war. And of course, each one hands their side a little better weapon than the other side gets. And it goes on and on and on. I hope to show you this so you understand. You're just fools for killing each other. Why don't you stop? So anyway, you're looking at an ancient artifact of a very, very important scene. And this artifact, you would have no clue. I have got it preserved here. I have no idea if that's in a private collection. Probably is. But if it isn't, if it was in a museum, then ISIS got a hold of it and destroyed it. You see what I'm saying? So, for instance, this Sumerian flood story on the one right across from it, that could very easily be destroyed if it's sitting in Baghdad in a museum, or if it's sitting in Syria, or if it's sitting in any of these places that ISIS rampaged through. Anything pertaining to the gods, those Muslims must destroy. Otherwise, who is Muhammad? So, and you might ask, who is Jesus? And you might start asking, who was Abraham? And so on and so forth. And they don't want you asking that. They don't want you knowing that. No one who knows this wants you to know this. They're in secret societies. That's what a secret society is about. This secret. That's the whole purpose of it. And it started with the Knights Templar as they went to and knocked the Islam off the Temple Mount. They went to Solomon's Temple. They checked because Solomon had many tunnels and different. He even had horses underground. But in Solomon's Temple, they went to check because Muslims are not interested in ancient history. No way. They don't let you do it now. And anyway, the Knights Templar controlled the Temple Mount. They went and checked. And they came out of there with enough evidence of what you're seeing right here that they had the Pope blackmailed from about 1190 to today. And I would imagine every religion is under the control of the Masons because they hold the cards that just might destroy everything you are taught. Right in front of you is proof that all things you are taught is a lie, and the real things are hidden from you. So here they are. I hope you appreciate this. So you're looking at the artifacts and different flood stories. This one from the civilizations of Akkadians. This one the civilization of the Assyrians. This one from the Babylonians. You get the idea. Okay. There is also a tablet 7F towards the end here. Is a Gilgamesh tablet. When you go to Uruk, which is the city-state that Gilgamesh is the king, he is a giant mixed breed that is directly related to the gods, and he's got special favors. His mother is a goddess, and his father is the giant mixed breed spouse to the goddess. It's all discovered on Uruk. The spouse, husband, mixed breed is Lugalbanda, and then you'll see the king Gilgamesh. Many texts about Gilgamesh, because he was a hero of old, men of renown. Exactly what Genesis is saying. Next, you'll see an artifact of the boatman, the story of Gilgamesh. You can read that. But you're looking at Gilgamesh runs into Noah. What? Gilgamesh comes thousands of years after Noah. I mean, thousands of years. And when he runs into Noah in his travels of exploration and whatnot, trying to live forever, he asked his mom, can I live forever like you? And she says, you better go get in those, okay? Which is where Noah is, living forever. Gilgamesh runs into him and goes, good God, man, you're still alive. How can this be? And Noah shows him what Enlil is doing for him. And that's on the last slide, 10EA. And here... This is so incredible. Here you're looking at Noah's spouse on the left, which is his first cousin. And you're looking at Noah in the middle, and he's, you're looking at Gilgamesh on the other side of this plant, and there is the food of life, the plant of life, the elixir of life. And this is how Noah and his spouse have been kept alive for so many thousands of years. I guess it's his reward for being the survivor of the human race. Anyway, they're tucked away, living forever under Enlil's authority. Gilgamesh looking for Enlil so he can be like Noah and live forever. And his mother says, you must have Enlil's okay for that. Here he is looking for Enlil, runs into Noah, and Noah says, here's how they do it for me. Wow. He tries to take that back with him, of course, to Uruk. And there's a story there that you should read. It's in the Epic of Gilgamesh. Different texts, different civilizations, same story. Look at that artifact. That artifact is somewhere around the time of Noah. Come on. I'm sorry. Somewhere around the time of Gilgamesh. Let's see. We're talking 4,000 years ago or more. That artifact's been around a long time. Who could do this reverse carving? Who would even think to do it? Come on, people. So you're looking at obvious problems when you see what's before you and you think about what's been told to you. Okay, under this slideshow are some texts. There are some king's lists. One of them's got a one star, which designates the importance of it. The two star is a little more important. the three stars the most important. So look for the three stars if you want to start with the best and then look at the others. The Sumerian Kings list, I don't do this very often, I put three times. I say a must read with three stars. I'm trying to get this across. This is a must read. So when you start reading about the kings before the flood and the rest, you might learn something here you just never knew. But you've read it in the Bible. It says the Nephilim were on the earth in those days, and also in the days after, when the sons of God went to the daughters of men. That's sons of God. Went to the daughters of men, this is the Bible, right? And had children by them. You mean these sons can have sex and had children by them? They were, these children, the heroes of old, these Nephilim, the heroes of old and men of renown. Well, who would be the first heroes of old that are written in the history books you've never seen? Who would that be? Well, one of them would definitely be Noah. And this is what the website is totally about. This right here. The Nephilim who came down had sex with the daughters of men. I'm giving you the entire history. Who did what? What was said? And the artifacts, you can take a look at how they tried to record it. Forever, for your benefit, today. Now let's read a little something out of maybe the instructions of Shurupak. This is a quote out of one of these texts. Kingship was taken to Shurupak. You'll probably find in the Sumerian Kings list that I'm telling you to read. Kingship was taken to Shurupak, because kingship would move around different city-states depending on how loyal the king was and just whose offspring the king is, depending on who would be the major city-state with the major king in Sumer, in Mesopotamia. Anyway, kingship finally gets to Shurupak, and Tutu, he is the king, and he rules, not lives. He rules for 36,000 years in Shurupak, Ninlil's city-state, the spouse to Earth Colony Commander Enlil. So this Ubarb Tutu, 36,000 years, he's king. He's obviously one of the heroes of old, men of renown, or he would not be listed in the list of early kings. And then, of course, I put this in just for a little tidbit. Total 8 kings, their years 222,600. People try to say these PhDs try to tell you that, oh, they didn't know how to count years back then like they do today. Every time the sun rises is a day back then, just like it is today. And we got all our information that we use today, the zodiacs and all of it, from the gods. It all was given to us way back then. And they don't want you to know anything about it. This is for the first time you're seeing the whole complete story, as best I can put it out, and it's good enough to give you an understanding. So next, after you're looking at Ubaratutu, in comes Noah. Noah is Enki's son, as I said. But one of these giant demigods, I think Lamech in the Old Testament, he's going, oh, wait a minute, Noah can't be my son. There's no way he could be my son. And the reason for that is he doesn't look human. He's glowing. His eyes are blue. He has white, light skin. His hair is white, light. Nothing looks right for this father to say, what happened? And so that's exactly, Noah's father, I think it's Lamech, he goes, what happened? And so he runs to Methuselah and says, which is his grandfather or great-grandfather, what happened here? What happened here? This is the Old Testament. And in the mysteries of the Hebrews. So what happened here? What happened here? Well, it was obvious. This is the son that is special. Obviously, you will accept him as your son, raise him and protect him as your son. And he's special. So he backs down. He says, okay, all right, that's what I'll do. Son of Enki, are you kidding me? I'm not going to argue. So Noah has a special place in Enki's heart. Here sits Genesis again, and it says, and the Lord God said, the man has become like one of us. I'm sorry. As I read the Torah, as I read the Old Testament, man has become like one of us, and God is speaking? I thought there was one God. And when it says, let us make man in our image and our likeness, I don't understand who us, our, and there's no way to explain it other than right here. So if you do know the Old Testament or the Torah, as I talked with a PhD one time about this, I just wanted to know about Enoch because I happened to go to Kish. You'll see the king Etana. You'll know about Enoch. Anyway, it's all here. I hope you'll spend some time and at least look for the three-starred texts to try to give you an understanding, to be scared at all. It's just the understanding of who you are and how you got here. And you wouldn't be here if Enlil had his way. He's known as Zeus. I guess you would probably understand him under the name Zeus for the Greeks. That's Enlil. So I want to thank you for coming. Before I go, I'm going to say again, under Noah, look at the Eridu Genesis. That's a must-read, three stars. The Great Flood Story, version 2, it's a three. How do you not be interested in Noah's flood? A real account that's much, much larger or detailed than the biblical account. And they do match. There's no contradictions here. There's just different detail. So I thank you. There's a reason you came to this website. I hope you got something out of it. And I gotta suggest that you keep looking at some of these important pages if you're interested. If you're not, I'm sorry. Please don't come back. This is not for you. But for those who got to know, who are interested in knowledge, who are actually interested in the human race, and there's lots of people making money on what? The human race? Lots of money. So I would imagine maybe some people like me are looking for not only the truth, but the historical facts, evidence of the truth. It's amazing. Thanks again for coming. I hope there's a impression upon your stretched out brain or mind has been bent a little. I apologize, but I do hope you liked what you saw. Please come back, and thanks again for coming.